Good morning. Great to be back with you. Buenos dias. it's been quite a year. I guess almost 11 months ago, you guys were very graciously praying for our family and sending us, and we survived. And there were moments we thrived. There were moments we just survived. There are a lot of things that have happened over this last year, but we've learned a ton. As I share with you, it's kind of hard to decide, like, how do you, in a small slideshow in 30, 40 minutes, how do you put together what you've just experienced traveling halfway around the world in a different culture, in a different experience with new people, with your family? So it won't do it justice for sure, but hopefully it will at least give you some sense of what we've been doing. Many of you have been praying for us and supporting us as we've been there. And just to say, like, this is how we saw God work in many different ways. I think as a missionary, as you go, which any of us who are followers of Christ, we are missionaries. We all are missionaries. But removing yourself from the familiarity of your life here and doing something where the illusion of control and the illusion of keeping things together, some of the safety and the cleanness of your life gets kind of stripped away. And so the perspective that you gain in having that experience is incredible, but it doesn't always look like really big experiences that it's not like a traumatic experience that suddenly shapes you. It's like all these small things in your life, in your day-to-day living, in the way that you're interacting with people, the way that what you're even learning about your own self, your own brokenness, your own need, the opportunities that you have. There's so many small things. It's like they accumulate. And so it's hard to express, especially only a week out from being back, what all of this feels like and what we're learning God has taught us. But I'll do my best to give you at least a small portion of what we experienced. It was funny, when I went 2 years ago for a vision trip to Bogota, Colombia, the team said, when we're going to come back, Colombia is a very dangerous country, and the greatest danger is that once you get there, you won't want to come home. Which there were a lot of things we didn't want to leave behind, but also Colombia didn't want to give us up either. They were making it extremely difficult. The government, the immigration policies might be the most dangerous thing in Colombia. We're glad to be back, and we're glad for what we've learned, and we're still processing. In the Great Commission, Jesus calls us to go into the world, right, to make disciples, to teach others what he's taught, and there's something very, very, very valuable about taking the gospel to the world. Christ has called us, it's paramount, it's part of the believer's life, that we would share our faith, that if something matters enough to us, that we wouldn't be able to be closed-lipped about it. We would have to go to the world and proclaim, who is God? Who is this God we worship? But there's also a part of being a missionary that's about what going does to you. Because missions isn't just about taking God's heart to the world. Missions is about your heart becoming like God's. And I'll say this, that God's heart is largely broken about our world. There is a great hopefulness. There is a great joy in the Christian faith. But there is a part of God's heart that we don't want to always resonate with. And that part is the part that sees and allows the brokenness of the world to affect us, to create compassion, to create gracious response in our own life. And so we had a lot of that opportunity. Because when you supplant yourself into a new culture, a new country, new language, new experience, so many of the comforts and things that are easy are pulled away, and you see yourself and you see the world and you see God's heart from a different perspective. And that's invaluable. It's invaluable. So I have just some slides here. I think that going, these are some of our bags when we left, but when you live a year out of those bags, you really get a sense of what the scripture teaches, that we're sojourners in this world. It's true. That there is something greater we're looking ahead to. That this isn't as good as it gets. This is just a foretaste of something much better. That we're just passing. We're passing through this space. That it's very important how we would use these hours, days, and minutes of our life. But that you get this sense, God's called us to go because we are ultimately going, but we're going even to a greater place, a place of eternal life, a place of full exposure, experience of God. And so I think people thought we were crazy for moving our family to Colombia. We are a little bit. But I think that when something matters to you, the cost is worth it. I think that when something really matters to you, you'll be fanatical about it. And so I think that it's okay to do fanatical things always for the good of God, right? For the gospel, for the sake of the gospel. You know, I didn't want my kids to grow up in a home where they heard their parents talk about their faith in a way that they just talked about their faith. I wanted my kids to know that we were willing to do something costly because what Jesus taught us and what a relationship with him means to us matters so much that we're willing to take the risk. We want to live an adventurous faith, not a faith that settles, not a faith of convenience and comfort. I heard a quote while I was in Colombia. They said that a person without purpose lives for pleasure and comfort, but that when you have a purpose, no pleasure or comfort can supersede what you want to live for in that other purpose. So we moved. We moved to Bogota. If you're going to do something crazy with a family, take another crazy family with you. That's my advice. Largely, these were a lot of the only friendships that our kids had because Bogota, in general, was a very cold city. The people there, they call them rolos. It's this sort of a phrase to encompass this very fast pace. Imagine sort of New York City, like a Latino New York City, 11 million people. Everyone's kind of indifferent to one another. You know, we were there for 9 months before someone invited us to their home. It's not your typical sort of Latino, Hispanic culture. They value family and they value hospitality. It's a cold city. It's a very cold city. It's a very fast-paced, rush city. And so a lot of the Miller family who went with us, Krista, Brett, and then their four children went with us. They were some of the best friends for us while we were there, which was really, really important. Because it was a hard year for us, relationally. But we wanted our kids to experience, both of us, as Brett and I talk, like, we wanted our kids to experience a new culture. We wanted them to experience God's heart for the world. We wanted them to see the world in a different light, and the gospel in a different light. And so, yeah, we were both crazy enough to do it. And so, but you know, I think any of us are crazy enough to do it, if our values, if what we love is really paramount. Then we do whatever it takes to live in accord with that. And so I want to bring Cora up. I was excited that she was willing to actually share a little bit this morning too. Because a big part of why we did go is we wanted this to be a transformative experience, not just for us, not just for the people that we met and shared the gospel with, but we wanted it to be transformative for our children, for our home, for our families. So you can come up, Cora. She's a little bit nervous. Neither of us have really spoken in public for about a year in the States in English, so it's a little bit tricky. But I would love for her to be able to share with you, so you can share a little bit about what you learned, Cora. That'd be great.
Hello, everybody. Hi.
Skip a little bit to the mic here.
I'm going to share five things that I think God taught me, like, while we were in Colombia. I mean, I always learned Spanish and experienced new culture, but what I want to talk about are some of the things that were more meaningful or important lessons that I learned. So the first thing is that friendship is super important because there weren't many opportunities for me in Bogota because of COVID and because of the cold, like, culture, the coldness of the people there, and I felt lonely a lot while I was there. So now, after a year where I didn't have, like, very many meaningful friendships, I have a much higher value for friends coming back into the States. The second thing is that God never stops working. I didn't get to do much ministry work in Bogota, which was really disappointing to me because I love to serve others. But God taught me that he could work even in the smallest acts of service and love, and that even if I don't see him working, that doesn't mean that he isn't. And that just because I'm not working doesn't mean that God has stopped working. I don't believe that I've seen the full impact of my time in Bogota just yet, but I look forward to seeing how God uses the time there to shape my future. God has given me also a greater capacity to love. Always showing kindness toward the cold and often impatient people of Bogota was hard, but a great opportunity to help me develop more self-control and to learn to love unconditionally. My heart broke for the poor and the orphans in Colombia and those and all the people there who really needed love. And I'm just so grateful that God put me there and enabled me to share his own love with all of them. I think it's always better to give than to receive. I loved the few chances I had in Colombia to serve others. Even small things like buying a meal or giving spare cardboard to someone on the street brought me such great joy. One of my favorite experiences in Colombia was teaching English to a group of orphans who were traveling to the States. I loved them, helped them, played with them, and taught them all day long. I put so much of my energy and love into caring for them. And after those classes, after hours of work and loving children who needed all the love I could give, I never felt empty. Somehow, after pouring out so much, my heart always felt fuller than before. And the last thing was that being a missionary and following God is hard, but it's so worth it. As you can imagine, it was really hard for me to move to a new country, to learn a new language and culture, and then have to leave it all again. But I learned so much there, and I had so many unforgettable experiences. Through the hardship, I learned to trust God more. And through every experience, both the bad and the good, he is transforming my heart to be more like his. So thanks for listening to me sharing a little bit about my time in Colombia and for always being supportive of my family. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your morning, and Dios les bendiga.
Great. Thanks, Cora. Yeah, I can't tell you how proud I am of the way my family has not resented me for taking them into something hard. not knowing what was ahead, but seeing that even through difficulties, God's doing something. You know, as I tell people that our time in Bogota was difficult, oftentimes, you know, they're apologetic. They feel bad that our time was hard. But I don't know that we should have, I mean, I don't feel like there needs to be an apology. Like, it's okay. Like, life is hard sometimes. What God takes us through is difficult sometimes. And the more it costs us often, the more we see how valuable our faith really is to us. And so it's okay that it was hard. Our family has embraced that it was a difficult season for us. That does not mean that God was not with us. I think there's an illusion in the Western culture that thinks that when life is easy and pleasurable and convenient, that somehow God is most there. But that wasn't Jesus' experience. Jesus' experience was that in some of the most tumultuous times, he saw God show up in the greatest ways. And for every believer, I think that that's true. And so it's okay. It's okay that my kids had a hard year. It bonded us. It exposed some of our own weaknesses and the areas we need to trust God more. It solidified our dependency on God. So it's okay. It's okay that it was a difficult year. But we also saw God do some incredible things in the midst of that. So in Bogota, it was a strategic opportunity for us. One of the big reasons we went to Bogota is because it's sort of the pinnacle of higher education for Latin America, South America. There were nearly 1 million students in the city, over 120 universities. And so it's kind of the mecca of higher education. And so the students who will be graduating, raising families, starting businesses, being involved in industry, these are all people we had an opportunity to influence with the gospel. And it's also a city that is very cold toward the gospel. Most of them have been hurt by Catholicism. A lot of them have been more on the mystical, spiritual side. Really almost none of the students were that interested. As you walk onto a college campus and ask the question, I would literally just walk to a student, which they're very open, generally. They're not really warm and receptive, but they're open. And I would ask them, you know, hey, we're starting a student organization on campus. We're looking for Christians who might be interested in helping lead or start something. Are you a Christian, or do you know any Christians? Almost every student you encounter says, no, I'm definitely not a Christian. And no, I really don't know any Christians. Then we'd have an opportunity to share the gospel with them if they would be willing to walk through some of our tools. We had pictures that we could show them and have them describe their life. We had something called Perspectives, which is basically a survey of their worldview, which asks some of the like five most important questions about life, finding out where they stand, so that you get an inroad into have a conversation about what they believe about Jesus. Five of the eight campuses that we were on most would have been Los Andes, Javeriana, Central, Nacional, and Estrenado. And so those were larger and wealthier campuses. No one in Bogota really speaks English. So that was difficult. Yo hablo español un poquito. I speak a little bit of Spanish. My Cora became more fluent. Our other kids became more fluent as we were there. But it was very hard. I mean, being in a city where you don't speak the language and others aren't willing to wait or really help you to learn their language was difficult. But the more wealthy the students were, the more English they spoke. And so I spent a lot of my time on some of the more Ivy League type, more prominent universities like Los Andes and Javeriana. And then I could actually engage and have a better and more deep conversation with students because they were able we were able to connect. At least I could make out their Spanish enough, or they could make out my English enough to figure out when we hit common ground. But a lot of our time was done just doing outreach. COVID had wiped out what small crew movement was already in Colombia, largely. Just the lack of interpersonal stuff. The government shut everything down, I mean, in even more radical ways than the States. At one point, children were allowed outside for 1 hour a week, two times. So they could have 30 minutes and 30 minutes twice a week. One of our leaders only left her apartment once in 100 days. So there were parts of the city that were incredibly shut down. And really, whatever small relational community that students had to grow in their faith or to ask spiritual questions was wiped out with COVID. And so this is just a couple of pictures of us sharing our faith. We would just go on campus and have conversations. It was unlike a lot of the rest of the Latin world, Latino world, because Colombians weren't really that warm toward the Americans. Like the U.S., they would consider themselves American too. It's kind of complicated. People from the States, they weren't like enamored, or we didn't have sort of a fame factor. We weren't really, people weren't like, ooh, Americans are here. Like, they actually kind of resented most people from the States, at least in Bogota. So that made it even more challenging. I mean, I was reminded of like the prophets or the disciples going into cities, going to people who didn't necessarily want to hear the message that God had called them to take to them. And a lot of times it felt that way. And so we would have conversations, and people say, oh, that's interesting that you believe that, thanks, I'll give you my number. They give me a fake phone number, I leave, and we never see them again. So a lot of that happens. You know, I wish that it was like we saw hordes and crowds of people just flocking in to hear the gospel and churches planted, but that's not the reality of what missions typically looks like. And as much as I wish it were, there's a part of my own growth and experience in trusting God that happens in the midst of disappointments and in hardship. But the average college student believed two things very, very adamantly. First, they would believe that when I asked them the question, what is the meaning and purpose of life, they adamantly believed that it was for themselves. 99% of students, and this is also the trend in the States, would say that the number one most fulfilling, satisfying, purposeful reason for life is to live for yourself. Which is exactly the contrast of what Jesus says would bring us happiness. He says, for the one who wants to save his life, he'll surely lose it. But the one who loses their life would surely gain it. That unless you die to self, you cannot experience the purpose God has for life, and you cannot experience the pleasure, the satisfaction, and the fulfillment that comes that you're looking for. But students were largely always living for themselves, unapologetically, that is the best thing to do in life. When I asked their friend, like, hey, your friend says living for himself is the best. Does that work out well for you as his friend? So when there's like a decision, then he's like, yeah, well, we're obviously living for me. And you're like, well, I'm obviously living for me. I'm like, it doesn't really work very well, does it? And they're like, it's fine, it's fine. You know, they weren't really willing to admit the realities of their beliefs. The second thing is that they all believed in relativism. And so when we talk to them about anything that is being true, whoa, like, what do you mean true, right? Everyone can have their own truth, and so that's okay. Like, I have my own truth, and they have their own truth. And so their value was that they valued tolerance. They wanted everyone to believe what they believed, but they didn't want to admit that any one individual could hold the ultimate truth, an absolute. And so the conversations were hard to navigate because there was a lot of just circular ideas. You couldn't land on anything. They wouldn't even agree that something was real or not real. It was very difficult, which is also oftentimes the way it is in the States now. And so, you know, I would ask them, like, You're saying to me that you know for certain that there isn't one exclusive truth. Yes. You're certain. You're absolutely sure there's not one absolute truth. Yes. Well, that's an absolute. You've just made it an exclusive statement that there is no certain truth. So you're being closed-minded, and you're believing that you hold the truth to say that there is no outside truth outside of you. So that makes you king, right? That makes you God. Well, I hadn't really thought about that. So if you're saying there is no truth, then that's as exclusive a statement as you saying that everyone else has their own truth and they're all true. So I'm like, well, what confidence do you have? You don't ask the homeless teacher for advice on your civil engineering. Why not? Because he doesn't have experience, he doesn't have education, he doesn't know, he doesn't have any real basis for what he would tell you. You go to a professor, right? And so you go to a professor because they're an expert in the field, because they have education, they have experience. I'm like, have you ever experienced heaven? Have you ever experienced spiritual things? Have you ever talked with God? There's a man who came and said that he's experiencing things, that he came from heaven, he's returning. There's a man who came, he said, these are the spiritual truths, and I live in a way that proves these things are true. There's a man who came to give evidence that he holds what is true. He says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through me. What would keep you from placing your confidence that that truth is the real truth, instead of the truth that you have somehow imagined in your own mind, that there can't be any other outside truth? And so the conversations were always very complicated and very heady, very thoughtful. But also many times toward the end, especially as I got better at having conversations, students would often say to me, as I shared with them, there's nothing they can do to please God on their own. That there's no good thing that would ever make God, bribe God to love them more. But that God loved them despite themselves, and that a relationship with him is possible. And that their response to that would be gratitude, not performance for God. Coming out of a post-Catholic world, a world where people went, they would say, this idea of grace is the most difficult thing I've ever heard. I had a dozen people tell me that. This is the most difficult thing I've ever heard. And I didn't see anyone in the moment place their faith in Christ, but I saw a lot of people change from being a negative 10 on the scale to becoming maybe a 3 or negative 3, you know, moving up in terms of their belief and what how they see the gospel. So we didn't just go to talk to people about Jesus. We also wanted to develop relationships. We wanted to equip people. We wanted to build momentum just in the way that Jesus built into the disciples so that they would take the ministry to the world. So this is Martin. Martin's a student at Los Andes. We started meeting for discipleship. We met weekly. And by the end of our time meeting, he was like tearfully saying goodbye to me. It was really meaningful for me because it was one of the relationships that I was most able to connect with. And he said to me, you know, I used to think about God a lot, but it didn't really change the way I live my life. And you've challenged me to think about the gospel in a way that's radically changed the way I want to live. It changed the way I think about the future. It changed the way I talk to my classmates. And so he's just sort of beginning to become a leader with the ministry now. But yeah, he's a dynamic guy, and just thoroughly enjoyed meeting with him, discipling him, and helping him grow in his faith. He's one of the guys. One of the other guys is Jesus. I had a lot of opportunity to, the staff team was very young. There were 18 of us, actually, on the team. Some of them were nationals, some of them were Venezuelans, some of them were from El Salvador. A lot of broad group. It was a very big group. But I got a chance to disciple several of the people on there and to do a lot of the training with the staff to help them understand some of the elements of ministry. Just really practical stuff that after 15 years of being in ministry, I've learned, and then just share those resources and skills with them. But Jesus Lopez was our next door neighbor, actually. He's from Venezuela. He just got his visa. He'll be coming into Wisconsin to marry his fiance next month. So it's super exciting for him. He's waited years for that. And so, but he fled Venezuela for obvious reasons. But he's on staff. He spent a ton of time with the boys. He poured into our boys in Cora so much. But I was able to meet with him weekly. And he's getting married. You know, he's making huge transitions. He's in ministry, but he grew up largely without a father figure. I had an opportunity just to pour into his life, to be honest with him about areas he needed to grow, to encourage areas where he's excelling. You know, so he's texting me every day now. He's like, oh, I miss you, boss. He's got the teary eyes and whatever. Christ doesn't just call us to go and tell people a message. Christ calls us to go and invest our best into other people, to relationally connect with them, to in method validate what our message is. And discipleship is the best way to do that. So what a privilege. We didn't just want to be on campuses in one of the most desperate and poor cities in the world. We wanted to be active in the city. We wanted students to own their faith. We wanted them to share their faith. And we wanted them to take their faith to the city and transform Bogota. And so we did a lot of social outreach. We did a lot of social help stuff. These are some bags of food that we joined with other churches. We would hand those out. And we would invite college students. And the people who wouldn't talk about Jesus normally would come and help us hand out bags to the refugees and to the homeless and some of the indigenous people. And so we would do things like this. And here's one of the gatherings we had in a local park where in the city of Bogota, there were almost 400,000 refugees from Venezuela. So it was an enormous number of people. You usually could tell them because they would have this giant cart they would pull behind them with car tires, like a rickshaw. And they would get up at 4 in the morning so they could be the first one to the garbage bags. And they would tear open the garbage and collect the plastic and the glass and the metal and anything valuable, cardboard, and they would take it for recycling. And it would bring them in probably about 40,000 pesos, which is about $10 a day. And they could live on that. And that was about an average income for the country of Colombia. But they were desperate people, but we would take food and help feed them, their children. It's an incredible opportunity. We'd share the gospel with them. There are so many orphanages, so many people without parents in Colombia, in Bogota particularly. We were hoping that our kids could volunteer more there. Unfortunately, the government rules with COVID and other things wouldn't let our kids go in much. But this is one group that we went. A lot of these children actually have been adopted this year and are moving to the States to live with families. But they had never met white-skinned people, gringos, as they call us. They'd never met gringos. They'd never really experienced gringo culture. And so my family went and spent a little over a week with them, many, many hours, just trying to get them basic English phrases, just helping them feel comfortable with people from the States. And it was super, super beneficial. Like Cora shared, you know, you give so much to them, and they need to be bonded, but then you have to leave them. It's such a strange tension of doing a thing that's painful and hard, but also so satisfying. But I feel like there's so much joy in that. Our kids had an incredible opportunity. We hope to continue to partner with this organization and host Colombian children to help them be introduced to families for adoption in the States here as well in the future. There were several different orphanages that we were working at. One of the orphanages was an orphanage for children who were taken from their parents because they were usually incarcerated or abandoned. But the girls were between 11 and 18. They either had babies or were pregnant. Between 11 and 18. So Cora was older than most of the girls holding their children in the orphanage. This is one of the babies, and there's the Miller girls with Cora. We didn't get a ton of opportunity to work with them because of regulation issues that came up. But again, just a sweet opportunity to see the need. I think in the States, the church has become really good at insulating ourselves from difficult stuff. And I'm guilty as well, so I'm not saying this as a judgment outside. I think just as a whole, we've been able to insulate ourselves from hard things. And when you're living in a city as a missionary, it's stripped away. When you're working with the orphans, when Christina would go to the orphanage, and the little girl at the end of the day would hang on her leg and say, "Mama, mama, mama," and she has to leave and go back. And there's, you know, thousands of these kids. I think that the gospel is supposed to touch those spaces, that we're not supposed to be insulated from that kind of pain, from that kind of problem. I think that God wants us to be active in our faith in those spaces. And Bogota was a very great opportunity for us to do that. It doesn't change your heart in some feel-good rainbows and unicorns way. It changes your heart in this deep compassion and sorrow and admitting that there's such a brokenness in the world that Christ has called us to do something about it. Not just to know about it, but to do something about it. So that was a great opportunity. We created a friendship with a lot of the homeless there. There were so many people. They were hard workers. They just didn't have a lot of opportunity. This is Carlos. He doesn't have a name to most people in Bogota. He was a good friend of ours. Everywhere time we went out, we'd help him get food. He pulled a cart. We actually got him a cart so he could actually collect garbage to provide for himself, so he wouldn't have to just panhandle. He grew up in Medellin. He was actually a stable boy for, oh my gosh, I just forgot his name, Pablo Escobar. He took care of Pablo Escobar's horses in Medellin. He's got a bullet right here in his neck. He let me touch it. It's a big bullet. But Carlos, we bought him a birthday cake, and we invited him over, and we'd had this, all of our families had this party for Carlos. We sang him happy birthday in English and in Spanish. And I just remember looking around at the people from Bogota, thinking we were just had to be out of our minds. We were having this big birthday bash for a homeless man, Carlos, in the park. And I just remember how sweet that felt to me. Like, this is what the kingdom of God should look like. Like, how sweet is that? And when I left, he was like near in tears, asked if I could get a picture with him. He's like, why? I'm like, I want to remember you. I want to remember you. I want to pray for you. I want to remember Carlos. You were special to us. And then he prayed over me. But we couldn't be insulated. Missions is incredible. And even as you live as a missionary here, missions is incredible because it's your willingness, it's the taking the intention to not insulate yourself from the hard things of the world. I had an opportunity to do a lot of training. This is salt in Spanish. This was an opportunity for some of the students who were just getting involved to come and learn about leading, about sharing their faith, about how to do discipleship. Some of the basic skills that they've never really been a part of, so that we can begin seeing a multiplying ministry. We didn't just want to go in and dump a bunch of resources and head back out. We wanted to go in and develop people so that they could maintain a ministry long after we're gone. Esteban is one of the guys I worked with on the campus. He was giving me a picture as we were leaving here. I taught him some skills. He actually listened to me, which was a great, refreshing thing. He actually took my advice. He actually listened to the training and did an incredible job. He's a dynamic teacher. He began leading the Bible study at our campus where I was leading a Bible study. Just a really, really cool guy. We were not just wanting to go, but we wanted to develop people to send them, launch them. One of the ways, this isn't typical Colombian garb here. This is Middle Eastern garb because we've actually got a partnership with the Middle East where we're sending students and staff from Colombia to reach Muslims in the Middle East. And so there were quite a few that went this year, and this was a meal to basically, I shared my story about our time in the Middle East a couple years ago and tried to just to motivate students to go to the world, to take the gospel to unreached people. And so there's Colin and I in our fancy Arab garb. We brought a team for the first time. We launched a summer spring break trip in Medellin, which is one of the larger cities, Pablo Escobar's territory. About 6 million people. We brought a team in. This is a night view. It's just a beautiful place. And here's a team and the students who came at the end. We had a big party and invited students we'd met on the campuses and invited and shared the gospel with. One of the ladies actually gave her life to Christ that night while she was at the party. She was praying to receive Christ and gave a testimony at the end. It was pretty incredible. It was super encouraging, though, to see. We're hoping to launch and continue a partnership with Medellin from West Virginia University. So we'll now be able to continue to send students to work on the college campuses and help encourage and provide some help for the local staff in that area. We launched our first summer mission in Barranquilla. We also were in Bucaramanga. But we've got a summer mission. One of the students from WVU is on the right. And so Cassidy, we were able to send a team there as well. And we'll continue to send students to Barranquilla. I guess you can't. The presence, the experience for our family. This is a soccer team that would meet. We had academy. They would come three times a week, and the kids could be a part of learning football. It was one of the only opportunities they had to really play outside and meet other kids. There weren't really children in Bogota. The average family has less than one child. So there really weren't kids. And so this was just an opportunity. But most of these kids are named Juan. Literally, about every child they met was named Juan, every boy. I think they met like a dozen Juans. So we were always laughing, like, oh, did you meet another Juan? Yeah, which one was he? Like, it was like an ongoing thing because it's just such a common name. But they made friends with a lot of the, the students, the other kids here, while they're playing soccer. That was a big part of my kids' lives. We went to one of the soccer games there, which you've never experienced anything like it, I promise you. Yeah, the football games here get crazy, but they don't get crazy like these places get. These places get crazy, crazy. You had to take off your belt and leave it outside. You couldn't bring a belt in because people would hit each other. Couldn't bring change in. In Medellin, you couldn't bring your machetes, which they explicitly put on the list of things. You really couldn't wear jerseys in the city of an opposing team. You wouldn't even wear it of your own team, really, because it was like gang colors. I mean, you get mugged, you get jumped for wearing a jersey. It was pretty intense. Too far. Now, this is just kind of a snapshot of our year. There's so many campuses and students and staff represented there. You know, we connected with a team of believers across the world and had a family, you know, a faith family, a ministry family. You know, it was such a sweet time for us in that connection. And then all these students, you know, the people that God provided for us to have relationships with, that are now sharing their faith on campus, that are now meeting with other students and talking to them about Jesus, that are now understanding for the first time what it means to experience the love of Jesus Christ. And you know, it's a snapshot. It's not a thorough picture of what our whole year felt like. But what a rich experience to go where Christ calls you and to go at any cost and to take people with you and to be with a team that values the same thing, that lives for Christ, lives for the gospel, lives for reaching and helping others. What an incredible experience. You know, this is our team. The first week we were there, and I just think back, like, what we didn't know at that point, that what God would do, what he would change in our own lives, what we would experience. Not because we're special, but because we were just faithful. God is the faithful one. Like, we just went where he called us to go. And it cost me the same thing it would cost you. You know, it's my friend, you would always say, being a missionary, it takes three steps. It's the first three steps out of your door, and then it's the first three steps up the plane steps, and then it's the first. Being a missionary is just about taking the initiative. It's about recognizing the value of the gospel that's been given and entrusted to us and taking it to the world in a way that shows them, of course we're radical with the love of Christ. Of course we're radical with the grace that Jesus has given us to give to others. And so I'll be jumping back in Morgantown. I'm sure it'll feel just the same as Bogota. It's like more or less, más o menos. But yeah, I mean, it's reshaped the way I think about ministry, the way I think about relationships, the way I think about my family. But I'm really grateful. I'm grateful for the church. I'm grateful that ever since I've been a part of this church that they valued missions. It has never been a side venue. It's never been a marginal idea. It's been at the front of what they invest in, of what you guys invest in, of how you guys value not just having a church experience on a Sunday morning, but how you value taking the gospel to the world in a way that transforms people, and you're a part of that people. And so, yeah, I can't tell you how much I'm grateful even as you guys sent us. We felt your prayers. We sensed your commitment to us. We sensed the loyalty to the gospel as we went and did crazy things that we were afraid of and things that were God had to show up. And so we'll be back in Morgantown. Some people would ask about needs and things. We do still have, coming back, our financial needs have been a little bit hard because of, one, inflation, flights, immigration, and unexpected things. Our roof is needing replaced. So, yeah, I don't want to take away from any other giving you guys are doing. We do have a little bit of a need still, but not enough that would keep us off campus, but just more for us to get reacclimated in life and be at a place where life's a little easier with roof that doesn't leak and those sorts of things. But yeah, if you want to talk more about the specifics, the nitty-gritty, some of the funny stories, some stuff that I don't have time to share from up here, we'd love to talk to you. And yeah, it's a big part of who we are now. You know, we're still gringos, but somewhere in there is part of us that feels very Colombian. And so, yeah, thanks again for your prayers, your support, your love, and even just your excitement about our ministry and the investment in us and my family, even as Cora shared. I know many of you have watched her grow up from three apples tall to where she is now. So, yeah, thanks for being a part of that. We love you guys.